Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education here at the Modern, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings. Tuesday Evenings is a weekly lecture series. If you're unfamiliar, I invite you to visit the website, and we have the listing for the rest of the series for the fall season. Tonight, we have artist Rosin Crowe here from L.A. Many of you will recall Focus Rosin Crowe in the spring of 2009, from which the museum, through our director's council, acquired Sharp's Rifle Shop of that same year, a painting of that same year, 2009. It's a highly charged, large-scale painting of muted colors that suggests a distant past while topped with an explosive release of paint that relates something more to maybe graffiti or a Jackson Pollock painting. The title of the painting is Sharp's Rifle Shop, as I said, and it is among the favorites of those of you who visit the galleries. I'm happy to report that it is currently can be found on the second floor in Gallery 8E. So make it a point to visit Sharp's Rifle Shop. Prior to heading northeast for her education, receiving a BFA from the School of Visual Art in New York in 2004 and her MFA from Yale and New Haven in 2006, Rosin Crowe grew up in North Dallas, making her visits here something of a homecoming. So we're always glad when she can come back, and we hope this is the second of many trips. After graduate school, she was awarded a residency with the Site International des Arts in Paris, and her work has been represented in Paris since that time by the gallery Natalie Obadiah. With an upcoming solo exhibition, actually, at that gallery opening in 2013, something I assume she's working on now. Rosin's work is also represented by Honor Fraser Gallery in Los Angeles, where her recent exhibition, Ballyhoo, Hullabaloo, Haboob, has received a great deal of critical acclaim, in which the new work is described as a bit of a departure in palette and approach, but with that signature nod to the stories that make us. Yasmin Mosini, who has written before on Rosin's work and is a fan, has written for Modern Painter, saying that by focusing on mid-20th century American patriotism, bravado, social upheaval, and economic turmoil, Crowe draws from the past to comment on the present. And I think that was just such a nice, succinct way to describe Rosin's work. Rosin has remained quite busy developing an impressive international exhibition record since she was here in 2009. Some of her solo exhibitions have included Texas Crude at White Cube in London, where it was very well received. She was a big hit in London. And Paris, Texas, at the Gallery Natalie Obadiah in Paris. There was also Myth of the American Motorcycle, which was another huge hit for Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Contemporary, and Bowery Boys at Deitch Projects in New York. We are so happy that Rosin has made the time to be with us again, and we look forward to learning more about her experiences, work, and ideas to date. So please join me in welcoming Rosin Crowe.
Hi, can everyone hear me okay? All right, so yes, I am from Dallas. I grew up in Plano, but don't hold it against me. And my parents still live in Frisco, so it's nice to come back home and visit. And this museum was definitely a part of me, my art education here growing up. So it's an honor to be in the collection and to be able to come back. So I don't give that many lectures about my work, so I'm a little nervous, but my plan today is to keep it very folksy and casual and very Texas. So that's what we're gonna do. So let's see, we'll just start. It's hard with these. You never know exactly how much people know about your previous work and really where to start. So I'm just going to have a few older paintings and kind of talk about what I'm interested in and some of my past shows. And then I would like to focus on my inspiration and how I work as an artist and how I do research and show you guys my studio and what I'm working on in the studio now. So, like I said, casual. So, this painting is from 2005, so I was still in grad school when I made this painting. It's called Vertigo, and it is inspired by one of my favorite Hitchcock movies, Vertigo. And all of my paintings are really come out of a love of history. And so I started painting these historical spaces and kind of thinking about the psychology of these spaces and the cinematic and how I can kind of recreate histories and dream spaces almost. This one's from 2006, when I lived in Paris, when I was doing a residency there, called Silent Rooms with Carpets So Heavy All Footsteps Are Absorbed, which is, the title's taken from this film called Last Year at Marienbad, which is a French film, kind of 1960s, black and white, but my interpretation of it is full of color and, again, a dream space, the psychology of it. At the time, I was very interested in these kind of theatrical spaces, very Baroque spaces, over-the-top, decadent interiors. The paintings are very large, so you can kind of experience them as theater sets almost. You can enter them, and there are no figures in them, so you kind of the scale is human scale. This was my first show in Los Angeles, the Honor Fraser Gallery, called Night at the Palomino. And this show for me was very much about reimagining lost or iconic spaces of Los Angeles history. I just moved back to the States after living in Paris for 8 months, and I realized that I was much more American than I had thought, and that I really missed America and kind of the American interpretation of history, if that makes any sense. The French, you know, I mean, that is such an, it's such an old culture, and Paris is such an old city and has so much history, but it's almost hermetically sealed like a museum, and like everything has already happened. The invention has already happened. And what I loved about coming back to America, especially Los Angeles, and the idea of the West and expansion and new histories being created, and the fact that, you know, America is such a young country, and how we create our own history and our own nostalgia for that history at the same time, and demolish the history and rebuild, and how layered it is. So, let's see. This is the Koenig House, a famous Los Angeles house. This painting is Live at the Black Pussy, which I think I have a slide of, which is the artist Jason Rhodes made an installation in Los Angeles called The Black Pussy right before he passed away. And so it just became a very like charged space with his death. And it being in Los Angeles, very near my studio, so I wanted to do a painting of it. This is another installation view. This painting is the Palomino, which is this nightclub in Los Angeles, which is what the show was named for. Which it was this country music bar in the 60s and 70s where all these legendary acts would come and play, and it doesn't exist anymore, but I became obsessed with the idea of this place and this history and tracking down who performed there and where the building is now, like what it's become, and kind of imagining a history for it. This is called Tea Room at the Plaza, which is the famous New York hotel. And at this time, this was after my show at Honor Fraser. And so with this work, I was really kind of starting to think about America in the Gilded Age. and became obsessed with that history, like post-Civil War, pre-World War I. Just a really interesting time in American history, which was like American expansion. It really became came into its own as a world power, but it was also a period of extreme decadence, robber barons, manifest destiny, these kind of very American ideals. This is Lincoln's funeral, which is obviously a painting of Abraham Lincoln's funeral. So I've always kind of been drawn to the idea of these American tragedies and how these huge events like shape us as a nation and how they affect the psychology of the nation and our history. And so again, just like imagining these spaces, reconstructing these historical, psychological spaces, very decadent, lush paint. They're very painterly and unfussy. I kind of work very fast, so I don't ever want them to feel too fussy. This is a little Texas flavor. Wildcat in Paradise. So the oil fields, which I believe was maybe here for the Focus show. And this one was also the Queen's Butcher Shop, which is very much an ode to some of my favorite painters like Francis Bacon and Goya and even the Karachi at the Kimball next door. Love all those meat paintings. And this one you will recognize as being upstairs because I didn't need to include it. But so I think that something with these also is, you know, they're history paintings, but they're distinctly American in a sense that I think there's something very, very interesting in the way that Americans approach the world. You know, there's this self-confidence, this assuredness that is distinctly American. But I think it goes even further if you're a Texan. And like I always say, only Texas could produce somebody like Rick Perry who thinks he can be president. You know, it's like totally normal. Like, of course. So I think that, you know, I want that confidence to like come through in the work and kind of that brashness, that boldness, that go big or go home kind of Texas-ness in my painting that I hope is conveyed. So then my next show was in Paris, which I called Paris, Texas, of course. If I can, I like to incorporate a little Texas flair into every show title I have. So this was right after Jeff Koons had his show at Versailles, and I really love the idea of this American coming in and putting these enormous like toys in the Chateau de Versailles. It's just, I think it's brilliant. So wanted to give a little, you know, ode to that moment. This is the Grand Salon of Yves Saint Laurent, his interior. He was an avid art collector, and that is his living room before he passed away. This painting is Pop Art Palazzo. So you have your Richard Hamilton, your Morris Louis, Frank Stella, and Alan Jones' woman chair, which, you know, as a female painter, you love to kind of incorporate these super sexist artworks into your paintings. I mean, one thing I definitely like to do is quote other artists a lot and incorporate them into my work. So it kind of, you know, I like the paintings to be enjoyable for anyone to look at, but it's, you know, if you are kind of in the know of art, then maybe there's some other jokes or other levels that you can enjoy the painting on. This painting is of the Ferris Gallery, which was a famous Los Angeles gallery. And you have all the artists that showed there, like Warhol, Lichtenstein, Wesselman, Ed Ruscha. Again, just kind of taking other artists and creating these spaces, having fun with it. So this was my show at Deitch Projects, which was in 2010. And the show was called Bowery Boys. And I moved to New York to make the show. And I really wanted to make the show about the history of kind of downtown New York and from really the 1880s to the 1980s. So kind of bad boy culture, which I'm very fascinated in as a female artist. And so this is a giant subway painting. So that's kind of a little 80s flair. This is Kenny Scharf's studio. And this is the Pop Shop, Keith Haring's Pop Shop, which I think we have a close-up of. So, again, these kind of legendary historical spaces that I never got to go to, but could kind of reimagine and recreate for myself. This one was in the show also, the Opium Den painting. So that's a little more 1880s instead of 1980s. So in the fall of 2010, I had a show at the Contemporary Art Center in Cincinnati called The Myth of the American Motorcycle, which was really interesting. I didn't know that much about biker culture beforehand, but I really got to investigate it a lot and study it, and it was really fun. Just thinking about biker culture and kind of how, you know, in American history and how that can be interpreted. And the paintings were shown with custom painted motorcycles. So it was quite interesting. This was another one of the paintings, which is a gas station at night, but you have the little shout out to Ed Ruscha up here, and it's kind of a little flavor of Edward Hopper too. So in 2011, I moved back to Los Angeles, and I really started delving into the history of the South. Very interested in the South. I mean, I think the South has such an interesting facet of American history that's totally different than the rest of the country. It's really dark. It's very complicated history. And so this painting is the pool at the Biltmore Estate, which is in North Carolina. It's the largest privately owned home ever built in the United States by George Vanderbilt II in 1895. And it had this crazy indoor pool, but it's empty. And so I just found it to be a very haunting space. You know, a lot of these paintings, when I'm really painting these dark subject matters, I'm very interested in kind of, I don't know, getting in touch with the ghosts of the spaces almost. So I was very interested in plantation homes also for a similar reason, that I just find them to be these very haunting, dark spaces that hold this American history that's very traumatic. So this is one of the plantation home paintings that I did. Then, about this time, I really wanted to start experimenting with the materiality of the paintings. I felt like the subject matter was starting to get like darker and more complex, and I didn't find that the materiality of the paintings before was really matching up. I wanted the paintings to feel kind of grittier and not as decadent with the glossy paint that was working really well for the previous paintings, because those were much more about decadence. Whereas these paintings, I wanted to be much more kind of stripped down and, I don't know, a little mean in a way. So what I started doing was experimenting with bleach. So these paintings have no paint on them. They're actually dyed canvas, and then I paint the image on with bleach. So So it's a totally different process because it's also reductive instead of additive. And it kind of creates this weird photographic type quality almost. So there's a few of these. So this one is like a, you know, a dried out cornfield, very Steinbeck-like. This is a reconstruction, which is the building of the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in the early 1900s in Los Angeles. But again, really just thinking about abstraction, kind of letting go of the imagery a little bit. Also at this time, I was finding a lot of inspiration in literature. I was reading a lot of William Faulkner, Erskine Caldwell, Toni Morrison, John Steinbeck, and Cormac McCarthy. And I listen to these books on tape while I paint, so it's the kind of dark stuff. this is kind of a city view from like a foggy window almost. So this was my last show at Honor Fraser Gallery at the beginning of this year. And so it was quite a departure because I really wanted to let go of color for this body of work, let go of imagery, kind of let them be more abstract, and again, kind of finding different ways to work with the materiality of the paint so it's not as decadent, because again, I wanted the work to be more stripped down. So these are actually done with paint. They're not bleach paintings, but they are done with oil paint and wax. So they're much more matte and not as kind of glossy. I also started experimenting with kind of the installation of them and how I can kind of make them more theatrical in a sense and work with them almost as sculptures. And come, have them come off the wall and experience that, you know, have them be experienced differently. And this was a protest painting, so it really kind of comes off the wall at you when you're in the space. Also, the title of the show, Ballyhoo Hullabaloo Haboom. So I wanted the title to be a little abstract to kind of signify the shift in the work. Ballyhoo and hullabaloo meaning, you know, the celebration but also the uprising. But I also like them because they're kind of colloquial terms from the 1920s that aren't really used that much anymore. And haboob is an Arabic term for a dust storm, which is the technical term that is used by weathermen here. And over the summer, there were a lot of dust storms in Arizona when I was making this work, and there was a huge uproar about weathermen calling them haboobs because it was a Middle Eastern term, and these folks from Arizona did not think it was appropriate that we have soldiers coming back from Iraq and a Middle Eastern term is being used on the news to describe the weather. So I like the idea of the kind of xenophobia of that in kind of relation to all the other work and everything that was going on in the country. So and this is the other room that was kind of the Dust Bowl paintings, the haboobs. This painting is called Jackie's Strength, and it is a painting of John F. Kennedy's funeral. So this one, I, you know, really didn't want to use imagery, to no source imagery for this painting. I really wanted to kind of let the abstraction make the forms in it and how it kind of becomes these Rorschach of flowers, this overwhelming, undulating, psychological kind of space. And almost how I would imagine Jackie Kennedy experiencing the funeral of her husband as kind of not clear and almost hallucinogenic. Also, of course, I'm very interested in the whole Kennedy assassination because of being from here, so I definitely, it's something that I find really fascinating. This painting is called Lindbergh for President, And it's a ticker tape parade painting, which I did a few of for my show. And it's kind of like the suicide view, as I call it, like you're standing on the edge of a building looking down. So again, really allowing myself to work in a more abstract manner, stripped of color. This painting was inspired by the Philip Roth novel, The Plot Against America, in which, in an alternative history that never happened, Charles Lindbergh runs for president on an isolationist ticket during World War II and wins, and then America enters the war on the side of Germany. Because it is little known fact, but Lindbergh was actually a Nazi sympathizer. And he was a celebrated American hero, but he was a Nazi sympathizer. And so there's kind of this dark history that is the undercurrent of the painting. But it's also, you know, a joyous occasion, a celebration. So I kind of wanted, I didn't want the whole show to be sad. On that note, this is Martin Luther King's funeral. I mean, Martin Luther King is a huge hero of mine. And I find him to be, you know, obviously an amazing figure, but I'm so fascinated in these tragic American events, you know, this assassination 5 years after Kennedy. I just find it amazing. I don't know what it would have been like to be back that, you know, around and experience that. But this is kind of me trying to feel what that would be like. So this is his funeral at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. This is Tobacco Road, one of the Dust Bowl paintings. And the title is taken from an Erskine Caldwell novel. So these paintings, this is a new technique for me also. These were done with staining the canvas. So you take a raw canvas and they're stained with like acrylic paint. And then I seal them and go over them with oil on top. But I'd never started paintings that way. So you kind of get a different effect with the light and an atmosphere. They're kind of like my Rothko paintings in a way. this is a similar process. The French Connection, which is taken from the 1971 film, the title. So I did these under the bridge kind of urban answers to the rural Dust Bowl paintings. So they kind of correlate, but are the more urban versions. And allowing them, again, just to be really abstract and atmospheric. This painting is Orgy of Grief. I was just, for this, it's total pure abstraction, but again, letting these kind of floral shapes create a space and create architecture and through the emotion of that. I was imagining after an American tragedy, a U.S. embassy being covered with flowers, like an outpouring of grief. It's kind of got a little bit of a flavor of like the water lilies, Monet's water lilies to it. This is another ticker tape parade called Canyon of Heroes, which is what they call that area in Lower Manhattan where they have the ticker tape parades, but it's also the financial district where, you know, Occupy Wall Street was going on and everything like that at this time when I'm making this painting. When I wasn't listening to books on tape, I was listening to NPR while making these paintings, so I think all the politics somehow infiltrated. Okay, now we're going to get really informal, and I'm going to talk about my inspiration and my research process and my studio. So I collect images from everywhere that I can get them, libraries, books, films. This is from Vertigo, which is one of my favorite movies. This is from Suspiria, which is a really amazing horror film. Um, I obsessively collect stereoscopes, which is, you know, I love Victorian entertainment. So these are kind of the inspiration for the Dust Bowl paintings, the fireworks. I was thinking a lot about, you know, political conventions, obviously. This is a procession of Martin Luther King's funeral from the church at Ebenezer to Morehouse. Film stills from Gone with the Wind and the Gone with the Wind movie premiere. Race riot pictures. Now we're getting to my pictures. So this is my dog, Willie. One thing that's really important to me is to travel and research a lot of these places that I can't, if I can, go to them and see them myself and kind of experience them. So this summer I went on an epic road trip, me and Willie, across the West into the South. These two pictures are at Ghost Ranch, which is in New Mexico where Georgia O'Keeffe lived and worked, and I highly recommend everyone go because it's incredible. I mean, you get to see things like this in Arizona, which is really important. They don't have signs like that in Los Angeles, so. This is the El Rancho Motel in Gallup, New Mexico, which was the temporary home for movie stars while filming westerns in the 40s and 50s, including Ronald Reagan and Katharine Hepburn. This is the Little Rock Central High School, which was the place where they had the forced school desegregation in 1957. This is the Masons Temple, this one and this one, where Martin Luther King gave his last speech, the prophetic mountaintop speech before he was assassinated the next day at the Lorraine Motel, which is right here. And so, you know, like going to these places is so important for me just to be able to go and sit in these spaces and to listen to the speeches while being there and feel like I can somehow experience this history and if I can experience the ghosts of it somehow. Here we have the Ebenezer Baptist Church, which was Martin Luther King's church in Atlanta, Georgia. And this is the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, which was the site of the deadly bombing in 1963 that killed four young girls, but did contribute to the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. These places, it's just amazing that they still exist and that it was such a recent history, and it's so powerful to be able to go to these places, and it's so important for me and my research. Then I thought I would show you guys pictures of my studio. Have it be like a studio visit. I wanted to take a picture of me like opening the door and being like, hi. But you'll have to do without that. So this is my studio in Los Angeles, which is filled with kind of Americana, ephemera, lots of Texas bumper stickers. So some unfinished paintings and books and stuff like that. This whole box over here is a box of failed paintings. And I think, you know, it's important. No artist likes to talk about their failures, probably, but it's very important to me to experiment and push myself, and that, you know, that means failing. And I think it's important as artists to be able to be like, yes, these are terrible, and these are terrible, and I never want to see them again. So I thought I'd just show you guys kind of what I'm working on now. These are all in process, so very casual, but I've been kind of experimenting with having different paintings in groups, having them have kind of conversations and how they function beside each other and how they might create different meanings. These are two race riot paintings, and this is I've painted again that famous plantation home pool painting. So you know, I don't know, it's just interesting kind of playing around with like what those mean next to this one and how they function differently. I've also been experimenting with having the paintings kind of come off the wall and be more sculptural, which is something new. I don't know if it's necessarily working, but, you know. Also experimenting with kind of incorporating some abstract images with more recognizable imagery, kind of thinking about it in a cinematic sense where you have one scene and then you go to a more abstract scene and then maybe going back to a more recognizable image. Or making a huge group of them. And this one is an interior painting that I tried doing the same staining method that I did for the Dust Bowl paintings with an interior, and kind of how it creates this haunting effect with the staining and the bleach. And so that's how I'm kind of experimenting with that, taking that forward. And I think that's all the images I have. So maybe we can have questions, if anybody would like to ask me questions. We can have a very casual discussion. I think I talked too fast. I'm sorry. Yes, you.
You make a lot of paintings. I'm really impressed because you're very prolific. You must work a lot, is what I'm guessing.
I do.
I mean, can you guesstimate how many paintings you make in a year, or how long it takes you to complete a single painting, or...
I don't know. It depends. I mean, sometimes I'm much more productive than others. I mean, I definitely go through periods where I'm much more involved in the research. I'm either traveling or spending time at the library or something like that, reading, getting inspired. And then sometimes I'll just be able to make like 10 paintings in a month. But I don't always finish them. I mean, you know, sometimes in these really, really productive periods, I start 10 paintings, but I might only finish 3 of them, and then the rest go to the fail pile. But I do work all the time. I'm very obsessive about it. I mean, even being away to do this lecture, I'm like, I'm not working. So, so yeah. Yes?
I, you know, the Sharps rifle shop upstairs is a diptych, and
yes.
You mentioned something about the stereoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really taken with that, and it was interesting to hear it because in some ways, so many paintings and the Sharps Rifle Shop is almost suggestive of a stereoscopic view, except it's not. Except
yeah.
It's a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
A mirror image.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sharps is a mirror image that works no matter which way you put the paintings. And I wondered if you could comment on this the so frequent appearance of a mirror image?
Well, it is something that I'm definitely drawn to, having the same image on both sides. I think maybe it does come from the stereoscope or having maybe a reference image and it not being enough for me, and I'm wanting to add like multi-layers to it, and that's just one way that I sometimes work, is like doubling an image. Having it mirrored and confusing the space like that. So it's definitely something that I like to do in the work. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Yes?
If you were painting, what would you be doing?
If I wasn't painting, like as a career? I don't know. I really want to be a rancher. I mean, I grew up like loving horses and stuff like that, and part of me definitely wants that life, like living on a ranch or a farm. So maybe something like that. I don't know. Anyone else? Yes?
Could you talk a little bit about your process from early on, where you take a space and you indicate the perspective, and then you almost deface it in a way, and the layers and flattening? And
do you mean defacing it with like the enamel kind of? I wonder if we can get one of the images. That would be easier to talk about it. Like, something like this. I think that what I like about these lines of paint is the aggression. I definitely, the art world is a super sexist place, which is kind of shocking. I did not know that going into it. But it's definitely dominated by the boys. And, so as a female artist, you come up against a lot. And, I'm making these very large paintings, and, they're very bold. And I think it's part of, like, just being like, fuck you, kind of, Like, it's definitely, I have a tendency to do that sometimes. Sometimes I think I need to tone it down a little, which I did in the last body of work. But, it comes and goes. But I think that it's a bit of, and it's like the violence. I mean, a lot of these paintings, I'm very concerned with an undercurrent and violence in the subject matter, and that is kind of an echo of that, I think.
I think it's interesting too that it seems to establish, like, you've created this illusion of perspective, mm-hmm. in this interior space, and then it's almost a reminder, like, this is flat, this is a painting.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely interested in how they function, almost to keep you out. I mean, I like the balance of it pulling you in and then keeping you out at the same time, which for a lot of this subject matter, like, a very, very decadent palace interior kind of functions like that. It's a space that's very inviting, but you're not allowed to come in, So this kind of, this fine line between the psychology of that is definitely something I think about also.
Yes?
I had a question also related to those gestural marks. And when you showed the photograph from your studio of the fireworks, It kind of made more sense. Uh-huh. Part of it as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that kind of energy, which is important, I guess, to me, is also them having that vitality and that energy, which I think is kind of like a firework and visually representing that kind of energy. Yeah.
And I had another question about, you had mentioned your interest in history painting, and I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit. Are there particular painters of history paintings or history paintings in general that you admired? Or?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my favorite artists are like the old dead ones, like Goya, or Jericho. But what's interesting about history painting now is that there aren't really any American painters doing it in contemporary art. I mean, maybe a few, but not really. And there's so many German history painters because they feel like they have a right to contend with this huge German history of the Holocaust. And I don't know if it's that Americans feel like we don't have a history that's serious enough, because it's ridiculous. We do. And it's, you know, it's hardly ever talked about. And that's why, you know, I'm so interested in the ideas of like the South and like, you know, these assassinations and all these things, that it's a very profound, deep history. And nobody really is dealing with it. So that's why I'm interested in it.
Yes?
I was wondering, I noticed that at the very end you had figures in your race riot pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, why did you choose to include figures at that point when you haven't before that?
Yeah, it's a new thing. It's experimental. I don't know. I think that just kind of, you know, experimenting with how that would work with the energy of the picture. And I mean, just doing so much research with the kind of race riots and things like that, it seems like the figure is so important to tell that story. I mean, I kind of want to keep it somewhat abstract, but there are definitely kind of remnants of them in their existence. So it's new, and I don't know if I've totally come to terms with it, but you noticed.
Will you go back to that, or mm-hmm. forward to mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's kind of one here and a little bit here.
I'll ask one more.
Yes.
So you talked about, you know, the idea of history as a construct and triggering nostalgia, and your work is a conflation sometimes of events or fantasy into the event. So, but how do you see your work kind of in relationship to that notion of history as a construct? Or is it another layer, you think, of...
I do. I kind of think it's another layer of how we experience the history. But I'm also kind of pulling it out of like obscurity in a way, and kind of... like, for example, one of the things that I've been researching recently in LA is the history of James Earl Ray, the assassin of Martin Luther King. And he lived in Los Angeles, like a mile from my house that I just bought. And I just found that so fascinating. And he used to hang out at this bar called the Sultan Room, which was, you know, right next door. And now it's like a noodle faux shop. And I just... it's so weird to me that these things existed and are gone and nobody knows that they happened there. And so I'm kind of very interested in like tracking down these things and kind of reimagining them, or, you know, because there is no like, for that example, there's no like, you know, evidence of that existing necessarily, but what was that like? And, you know, so things like that. Yes.
In a number of the paintings, it seems to me that you're controlling the viewer's viewer through the painting, through the use of the reddish areas through the painting. Are you doing that consciously? Or is that something that affects you just like the paintings?
The red?
Yes.
Just the color, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, red is one of my favorite colors. I have a weakness for red and hot pink. I mean, they are effective colors, and, you know, I definitely am very aware of like where I use certain colors to what effect. But that was one of the huge challenges to myself of making the last body of work for my show in Los Angeles, was to not use any color. And can I still create a successful painting without that, which I would normally go to, like the hot pink, you know? So... yes. Yes?
I'm wondering if, because you do so much research and travel so much, if you have a very distinctive image before you start painting, or if it continues to evolve once you begin working on it?
It totally evolves. I kind of have a somewhat of an idea when I start and a loose sketch of how I want it to be, but it changes a lot, which is really exciting for me, because I find that's what's fun, is when the painting starts to answer things for you in a way. It's almost like the painting knows things that you don't, and you can kind of learn through creating them. Yeah, I've never really understood artists who like have like a photo and they're like, I'm just going to repaint this photo over here. And you know, like for me, there's so much in the process of making the painting where I learn and experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
How do you decide? There seems to be a lot of light sources, chandeliers and things like that in your works.
Mm-hmm.
Are they in the actual room, or do you take one from one room and put in another? Or
yeah, I usually add them. I add them, kind of make them up, like how the light's going to work and where it's coming from for the dramatic effect.
And they come and go, too. I can see that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. Definitely. Anyone else? Yes.
Why did you choose to go to school at Yale, and what did you get out of it?
Well, who wouldn't go to Yale? I never thought I would go to Yale. I mean, I went to Plano Senior High School, and I was just trying to get out of there. So I was not a super, you know, hardworking student in high school. But it was amazing. I mean, I went, you know, I got accepted because they liked my paintings, and it was one of the best experiences I ever had. It was really, the classes, you could take any class in the whole school, even if you're just studying painting. And so I got to take some really fantastic specialized classes, like a Harold Bloom Shakespeare class and a class on the English landscape garden and, you know, things like that. So it was great.
Yes?
You have such monumental sizes. I can see you climbing ladders and with all kinds of straight edges. And
yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I have lots of ladders. I just, you know, I love working big. I love kind of creating these spaces that the viewer can experience by like standing in front of as almost life size. Often the subject matter is so grand, you know, and epic, it really needs that space to breathe. I don't have a studio assistant or anything, so it's always just me in the studio wrestling with big canvases. I've gotten really good at carrying them around, even in stilettos. So, I don't know, I'm just used to it.
Yes?
Since your paintings seem to focus more on history, I was wondering how much you consider the different narratives of history, like those that are heard versus those that are not heard, because that seems like an important thing that people are addressing.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what's so fascinating about history is that, you know, who really knows? Well, there's a million different versions of one story, you know, and even if you were there and experiencing it, so were a bunch of other people probably, and they all have a different take on it. And so, and it gets misremembered, it gets rewritten, it gets changed over time. And so it's something that's constantly shifting, which is another thing that I find very interesting, and kind of these spaces being layered with, you know, different images and kind of different experiences. So it's something that I think about for sure.
Anyone else?
Any serious art world questions? Gossip? Yes?
You said you like American Tragedies, but I don't see anything on September 11th. Is there a specific reason for that, or just?
I don't know. It's like I've thought about it. It's almost too soon. I lived in New York, you know, during September 11th, so it's definitely something I experienced, and it's almost too soon to deal with it. I don't know, or I don't know how to deal with it yet. I haven't even fully processed, you know, my experience of it. So I've thought about it, but not ready yet. Maybe in the future.
Aren't most of your subjects from times that you wouldn't have experienced it? I mean, it seems like you're...
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I am drawn to things that I haven't experienced just because they seem more exciting and more, I don't know, out of reach, and kind of trying to get in touch with the past and how those events have shaped our current, you know, nation and how we deal with things now based on our history. So yes, generally things that I haven't experienced. Anyone else?
Thank you so much.
Okay, well, if anyone has any questions, you can come talk to me. Thank you.